I really do love when young parents come up to me and say, oh, my daughter just loves music. And I'm like, yeah, of course. Yes, yes, she does. It's the most natural thing in the world.
Yeah.
You did too.
I'm Phil Hatterman, and you're listening to Dog Words, presented by Rosie Fund. Today on Dog Words, Jenny and Jim Cosgrove discuss how he became Mr. Stinky Feet. His new CD, Scoops of Love, the song Puppy in Love, Foster to Forever Dog, Dobby, and much more. If you're new to Dog Words, in each episode, we explore the world of dog care and companionship. We Save Each Other is the motto of Rosie Fund, which simply means the more we do for dogs, the more they do for us, and they already do a lot. You can support Rosie Fund by making a donation on our website or Facebook page. You can also contribute by making a purchase from the store on our website, buying a t-shirt at bonfire.com, or buying our note cards featuring Rosie and Peaches and our shirts on barkyours.com. Links are in the description. Your donations and purchases help fund the Rosie Life Starter Kits that make sure these senior and harder-to-adopt dogs have some of the items they'll need in their forever home. Any donation amount is greatly appreciated, but here are some popular levels. $30 provides a collar and leash for a Rosie Life Starter Kit dog, and $100 covers their entire kit. You can also support Rosie Fund by downloading, subscribing, rating, and most importantly, sharing Dog Words. Follow us on social media, even if you aren't looking for a dog. Watching and sharing the videos helps our channel gain exposure, bringing awareness to our cause, and giving shelter dogs much-needed attention. Our free Rosie Fund YouTube channel offers great videos of Rosie, Peaches, and shelter dogs looking for their forever home. We welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions, especially if you have an idea for a topic or guest. Go to the podcast page at rosiefund.org to share your thoughts. Next time on Dog Words, Marine vet and author Craig Grossi tells us how he and Fred, an amazing dog he found in Afghanistan, rescued each other. The mission of Rosie Fund is to provide humans with the resources and education they need to give senior and harder-to-adopt dogs a better life. We thank you for joining our mission.
When my tail gets a wagging and my tushy starts to shake, you know I really love you, it's true, for goodness sake. I keep howling at the moon, cause I'm a lovesick pooch. Sometimes I slobber, but please give me a smooch. I'm a puppy in love, I'm chasing my tail. I'm a puppy in love, hear me howling way.
In studio today for Dog Words, we are delighted to welcome Jim and Jenny Cosgrove, and we're going to talk about dogs, of course. This is Dog Words, but also music and feet.
Yes. Stinky feet.
Stinky paws.
Stinky paws, yes.
Welcome to Dog Words, and thank you so much for coming into the studio.
Thank you.
Those are usually my favorite interviews, is when I actually get to see someone face to face. And speaking of feet and stinky feet, some of our listeners may be more familiar with your moniker, Mr. Stinky Feet.
That's right. Yes.
And how long have your feet been stinky?
Well, this is my 25th year as Mr. Stinky Feet. Holy smokes.
When you became Mr. Stinky Feet, were you thinking, oh, this will be fun for a couple shows?
Exactly. So when I started writing music for kids, I did think it was would just be kind of a one-year thing. And when we had an opportunity to record an album, I thought that would be that.
There, and we've done an album. We've accomplished everything you can.
Yeah, and really assumed that would be the only one we would do. And my 10th album just came out last month.
That's a pretty good pace.
Yeah.
An album every other year.
And by album, you mean cassette tape.
Well, originally, yes. Well, I was putting them out about one every year and a half, 2 years. And then the most recent album is the first in 11 years. So I did.
So you were on a tremendous pace there for a while.
We were.
You've been slacking off lately.
Yes. Right.
That was before kids. And when I met you, Ooey Gooey had just been released on CD. Mm-hmm. It was a big deal. Yeah. And I think you had your first DVD put out too.
Yes.
That was in 2001.
Jenny knows all the dates.
Yes, yes.
That's one of the reasons we have her here.
Yes, correct.
You said you started writing songs for children. At what point did you go from someone who, I can play guitar, I've taught myself to play guitar, I'm enjoying this, and some people seem to enjoy when I do this, to, it being a conscious decision to do a concert?
Well, my first engagement was a concert. A friend of mine who worked at Barnes & Noble in Leawood, they had just opened in Leawood, and she asked me to come and play a story time. It was a Saturday morning, St. Patrick's Day themed. She knew I played the guitar. Can you come and just sing some song for kids? And I said, yeah, sure. And so I did and thought, okay, well, that's done. But then some parents came up to me afterwards and said, hey, do you have a tape or a CD? And I said, no. Maybe I should get one. So that's when I planted the seed to actually record an album. And then this friend of mine left that job, and then Jenny took her job.
There you go.
And I continued to play Barnes & Noble, and yes. Jenny hired me to play a show, and that's how I met her.
Yes.
She carried my guitar.
Did you watch Parks and Rec?
No. Sorry.
So Chris Pratt, who yes. is now Star-Lord and right. in the right. Jurassic Park movies, and among other things, his doofus character is essentially the story you just told.
Ah, yeah.
Played guitar and just kind of had a band, but wasn't really going anywhere. And then someone needs a entertainer for a children's birthday party. And so he shows up and is Johnny Karate. Just so this one time, he's just going to do it for a friend.
Right.
And then that's parents exactly. are asking him afterwards, yeah. will you play me? And he's like, well, no, this is just for, and that's when his wife jumps in uh-huh. and says, here's our rate. I'll get you on the calendar.
Great. Yes. Well, that is pretty much how it happened. And really, I thought the one CD would be that. But then I started getting bookings to play at Barnes & Noble, other bookstores, other events. And then I had parents say, hey, we really liked that first album you did, but do you have another one? Because we're getting kind of tired of the first mm-hmm. one.
So, especially once you get to a second kid. It's like, yes. I've already listened to this a million times, right. and now I have another kid.
Please,
and it's fresh.
Will you come up with something else? Yes. Yeah, So we did another one, and that was actually the second album was Stinky Feet.
So before the second album, you were just
Jim Cosgrove. It was a dinosaur-themed album, so I was known as the dinosaur guy or Bop Bop because the album was Bop Bop Dinosaur. And then when Stinky Feet came out, kids started to call me Stinky Feet. And then wait, it's Mr. Stinky Feet. Ding. And then it stuck.
You have those moments where it's just sort of serendipity.
Correct, yeah. So I attribute the name to my young fans. They gave me the name.
But you had the presence of mind to recognize
To run with
fits.
It. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not smart enough to have come up with it myself, but was smart enough to notice it.
There's no shame in being opportunistic. Your right. Albums are available for download and also through your website. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And your website will be linked, jimcosgrove.com. It's going to be linked in the description for this. So no excuse for anyone not being able to find it, but also that's going to have your concert dates. And
yes.
What is your concert schedule like?
Well, summertime is very busy. We have lots of shows in the summertime. And really, now that we're post-COVID, it's picking up, and we're almost back to pre-COVID levels, really. So Jenny knows every date I have scheduled because she schedules all my shows. So I will have people come up to me and say, hey, we'll see you next week. And I'll say, yes, you will. I'm not sure where, but I'm sure you'll see me.
And not realizing it's your dentist.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with your concert schedule.
Right.
It's like, no, it's your 6-month checkup.
So during the summer, I'm playing a lot of libraries in the Midwest. And this year, I'm staying close to home, which is great. I travel all over the country and performed all over. But this year, we're staying closer to home, which is great.
And it's nice if you are in demand enough to fill out a schedule without having to travel thousands and thousands of miles.
You got that right. Yes.
And it gives you the luxury of, if you want to travel thousands of miles, if it's the right gig,
right. Mm-hmm.
then you do it, and it's a business expense. And you've had some rather high-profile gigs outside of Kansas City.
We have. Over the years, yes, indeed. Played for some U.S. military schools in Germany and Italy and England and Spain. We have played at the White House Easter Egg Roll a couple of times. We had a great gig here at home with the Kansas City Symphony.
Twice?
Twice, actually. I did two with the Kansas City Symphony. Right. And the last one was, 10 years ago, 12 years? It was 2012, so 11 years ago.
How does the Kansas City Symphony find you or you find them? Mm-hmm. Who connects those dots?
Do you remember how that came about?
I'm trying to remember how that came about. I think Brian, our contact, he used to be on the Warner Brothers label, and we met a man there who left Warner Brothers, and he was connected to a composer. And yes, we kind of had said, hey, you know, we've seen a few other children's musicians doing the symphony program. That would be really cool, right?
Well, I remember, though, yeah, that so the symphony came. I think they came to us and said, hey, we have five family shows we got to do a year, and it's the kind of the same show floating around. We want to do something different. Will you come and do a show with us? And they said, do you want to arrange the music for symphony yourself? And I'm not musically trained.
I don't have that kind of time. I would love to, but I am so booked. I'm scoring a couple movies.
Right. Or would you like us to do it? And we would own it. And I said, please do that. And so they contacted, through our contact at Warner Brothers, this guy who had arranged. And so he arranged eight of my songs for an 80-piece orchestra. And having an 80-piece orchestra behind you is...
It was
isn't
beautiful.
That just
amazing? And,
oh my word!
And we were able to. We own those charts now, so we've been able to produce that show several other times with the Overland Park Orchestra, Community Orchestra. Did that twice, and then most recently, our daughter is in the marching band at her high school, and we did a benefit concert for the band last September, and the students learned those pieces and were able to perform that with
Jim, which
was really incredible to do that on a high school level.
Yeah.
So you taught yourself to play guitar.
I did.
So you're teaching yourself to play guitar and obviously have no idea that someday you'll be performing with the symphony.
Correct.
But also these kids who were in a music conservatory have no idea that they're going to be doing a Stinky Feet symphonic show.
Well,
or anything foot related was probably unexpected.
Correct. And you could see in the faces of many of the performers from the symphony, like, we're doing what? Oh, like, it was a tad bit lowbrow for some, but no, most people really got into it. And I said to them, okay, I'm a musical hack. I have great respect for what you do. You all have studied. You are at the pinnacle of your careers. And here I am, a guy who knows a handful of cowboy chords on the guitar. I'm going to let you take it. I'll do the singing and I'll strum along, but.
And yet they relied on you to make that connection with the audience and the kids.
Correct.
And getting the kids up on stage and being an inspiration to children to maybe want to play those instruments now. They were working with you to connect.
Yeah, opening that, their eyes to the symphonic experience.
Because children don't have that experience. Yes. I mean, it's kind of like, it's a little, you know, stuffy for a child to go to the symphony. And I think the symphony was really trying to change that narrative.
Yeah. And that's why they do those shows. Yes, and absolutely. It's great.
It's a great way to introduce kids to the symphony.
And we sold out that show.
Yeah.
And a child's brain does not process music the same way an adult brain does, which is why it's a different kind of chord progression and rhythm and repetitiveness for music that appeals to children as opposed to art music that has something that pulls at the mind in a way that doesn't click for a child. So to be able to experience those instruments that are capable of producing that effect on a human.
Yes.
But with music that is accessible for them is so important.
And I think certainly kids can really absorb and appreciate symphonic music or you know, more complicated arrangements.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not analyzing it the way that you and I would, right? They're not picking it apart. They're just absorbing it and enjoying it for what it is. So, yeah, I think they can certainly enjoy it. It's just not picking it apart like we are.
Where did you pick up your cowboy chords?
My public library. I literally went, this is pre-internet, I went to the library, checked out a book, a picture chord book, showed me where to put my fingers on the fretboard, and I started strumming chords because I like to sing, so I wanted to accompany myself. So I just learned a few chords, learned some Jimmy Buffett songs and some Crosby, Stills, and Nash songs, and took off from there.
And were those your inspiration that you're thinking, if I could do, you know, some CSN or...
Actually, the very first song I wrote was a Cat Stevens song.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I credit them for a lot of my early influence, certainly. Yeah.
A song, and I'll play a snippet of it when I put this episode together. Puppy in Love.
Yeah. It's on the new album.
It's just a love song to our dog, right?
It's a love song to our dog.
See, I told you, listeners, we would be talking about dogs. Yes. And how fortunate a dog is to have a love song written for it.
Yes.
What's your dog's name?
Dobby.
And where did Dobby come into your life?
Oh, well.
Well, what are the dates, Jenny? When did...
Okay, sure.
So, yeah.
Yes. Okay, so our daughters are 16 and 18 now, and Dobby's 7. So, you know, they're elementary school age at the time. And, Mom, we really want a dog, really want a dog. And I honestly had to turn away from that because I had grown up with dogs and I had lost dogs. And I just said, I can't go through that. I don't want to go through that. I don't want to welcome a dog in my life because I'll have to say goodbye someday. And I'm just not really sure. But then, I don't know, there was a spark and I decided, you know what would be really fun is if we fostered dogs. And then we could get to know all of these dogs. Our kids could have kind of a revolving door of all these different dogs and we can be part of the connection to a family and help a family, help a dog. It'll be a beautiful thing. We'll foster lots of dogs. So we had two puppies prior to our one that we adopted and it was a really fun experience. And
it was
really amazing for our kids. And
I'm thinking like, oh, okay, this is great. Like dogs will just be here for, you know, whatever, a few weeks and then we can say goodbye.
And they were there for 3 weeks and they successfully got adopted and we cleaned up the house and rearranged it back to, you know, human life. And then it was too quiet.
It was, yes. It was.
You get used to that energy and that rhythm. Yes.
It was
so cool to see them get adopted too. Yes. And the families get excited about it.
It was only 1 week. And and my friend who runs Positive Tales Rescue was really new at the time. I don't think they had even hit their 100th adoption yet at that point. Now they've reached many, many more. But she said, why don't you just come over and you can have the girls sit with this new litter we got and just socialize the puppies and sit with them in the pen. Well,
what do you do when you bring two girls into?
So what happens? We come home with two more.
Yes.
And much to his surprise.
But it was great. It was great.
And it was beautiful and it was really sweet.
Two brothers.
Yes. They came to us as Hansel and Figaro. Figaro, we just didn't like that name. And so we changed his name to Dobby.
The house elf.
The house elf.
Harry Potter.
Yes. Because he had big ears, a small body. He was 5 pounds. And they were maybe a boxer, ridgeback, Staffordshire Terrier mix. Not knowing much about them, Mom was 40 pounds. So they're assuming you're going to probably have a 60-pound dog. His brother got adopted really quickly. And then just nothing came through for Dobby, no applications or anything. And meanwhile, the longer he's with us, the longer we all are getting attached. And we'd already named him. So we adopted him in May of 2016. And he was 5 weeks old, 5 pounds when we got him. By 6 months, he'd hit 60 pounds. So he is now 7 years old and a healthy 81 pounds now. He lost a little weight.
He lost 10 pounds in the last couple of years. He hit 90 and we had to back him off.
But he has brought so much energy and love into our family. He's just, I always say dogs are not pets. Dogs are family. Mm-hmm. And he is very much a huge part of our family, not just because of his size, but just what he brings and takes care of us. He's very protective. He's very loving. Yeah, he's just absolutely amazing.
He's a good therapy dog.
Yeah, he is an untrained therapy dog.
Yes.
And he knows exactly what we need and when we need it. I'm a breast cancer survivor, and during my treatments, he smelled the hospital on me, and as soon as I got home, he was glued to my side. I mean, he's usually by my side most of the time out of all the family.
Yes.
But I mean, he literally, it would just.
This is where I need to be.
Yeah. And he would. Yeah. And there's pictures of that time together. And he was never going to let me out of his sight. And whether we sat down in the grass outside or laid on the couch. And then he also knew when I needed to get up and he'd nudge me and we'd go out for a walk. And that helped me. I mean, of course, my family helped me through that time. But yes, Dobby.
Yeah. We were there too.
To keep the dog happy. The dog's going to be Dobby, really upset if
Dobby
we don't pay
was,
attention to
Dobby
to
was
Jenny.
A huge part of my healing, and he just gives so much love.
Yep.
They're naturally empathetic,
absolutely,
and they have this connection that we don't really truly understand.
Right.
And they take care of us, like you said.
And it's just absolutely amazing. I look at him in awe so much that he is, by all means, nonverbal in the sense that we understand language, yet I always know what he's needing and vice versa. And we have this ability to communicate.
And he communicates. I mean, you know, dogs find their way to communicate.
Yeah.
Whether it's a nudge or, but also vocalize. He does vocalize.
Oh, well, yeah. Some he barks too. And whines and growls. Yes. But not to have words
I'm
in the sense that
pathetic
we do.
Right mm-hmm. now. Yes.
But you know exactly
yes.
what is his intent.
Yep. You bet.
Jenny said part of the reluctance to get a dog is because you had been through the experience of having to let go of a mm-hmm. dog and how hard that is. There's so many reasons for that. The most obvious being that there's this hole in your life because something yeah. you love that's loved you back unconditionally is gone.
Yeah. So that life is so short with an animal.
But you described what Dobby did for you and in return asked for nothing.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So when you have to let go, I think it's almost inevitable that you feel like I've run up this debt that I don't get to pay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
It's like, I can't That's pay good. This off.
That's good.
I have so much I wanted to give to you.
No, and I
he
fully
gets
agree.
A lot from us.
Well, I was yeah. going to say that I fully agree with
yes,
you, and it leads to a very spoiled dog in many ways. I mean, it's often I'll be walking around the house and I'll be talking to the dog, and Jim won't know if I'm talking to him yeah. or
did
the dog.
You
I'm like,
did
no.
you say something?
I'm like,
oh, no,
did
I'm
you get dinner
dog.
Yet? No, what are you making? I'm like, no, I'm talking to the dog. I need right. no P8. Do you want to go for a walk? Sure. Oh, I'm just talking to the dog. Yeah.
How was your day, dear?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I was right now. I was talking.
So yeah, he's spoiled and he's well loved.
Yes.
So you finally wrote a love song.
Yeah.
To Dobby, yes. Puppy in Love.
Puppy in Love.
Was it something that had just been kind of noodling around in your head and you realized, oh, wait, I need to produce this?
Yes. In fact, so the album just came out last month, but the... that song I started working on probably 5 or 6 years ago.
He came into our life. Yeah.
And, you know, I think the influence of having fosters as well and seeing just, you know, and the love, I don't know, that the fostering process was so cool for us and watching the girls with them and just think, wow, every dog deserves that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think they come into this life not knowing anything but to love, really. I mean, I know that there are some dogs mm-hmm. that need to adjust to that, but I think they naturally love. But prior to that, you had If I Were a Dog.
Oh, that's right. I have a song, If I Were a Dog, I'd bark all day. I'd bark along in a barky way. I'd bark right up, and I'd curl in your lap, and I'd sleep there all day long.
And you have the Hiccup Pickup Truck, which
oh,
was
yes.
inspired by a dog that you did know, too, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yes. Pickup Truck is about... about a pickup truck with a little black dog riding in the back. And I used to have a little red pickup truck, and a friend of mine had a black dog riding in the back sometimes. So, yeah.
So the dogs are an inspiration for you on a few songs,
yes.
but most explicitly, Dobby getting the love song. So does Dobby know that that is?
Yes, of course he does.
No,
but wasn't, what was that time recently where I was playing it?
You were playing the ukulele.
I was playing the ukulele and kind
day.
Of singing to him, and he was he howling or was he?
He well, it's in the reel that I posted on Instagram for Puppy in Love, and it was like a snow day. I know there was snow.
He kept
snow
nudging
there.
Me or yeah. lick every would
he,
I play.
You would play, and he would stop, and he
oh,
would look at you,
right.
and he would paw
oh,
your
he was
chest,
pawing at me.
And then
like,
and
keep
you're
playing,
like,
keep
you
playing.
You want more, and then you'd sit back, and you'd play, and he just responded, and then at one
that's
point,
right.
I don't know if you're playing at a faster pace or not, but he just started attacking you with kisses.
Yes,
and it was just
right.
there we go. That's what I was looking
so
for.
So every time I stopped, he would. Nudge me to keep playing, you know.
Well, that was one thing, then, too, I remember as a puppy when we still, I think we were on the fence about fostering or adopting him. It wasn't final yet. And one of the things that spoke to me of like, this is our dog, was his response to you playing guitar. His brother had gotten adopted. He was lonely. He was mopey. And I remember yes. you play the guitar and Dobby's eyes just watched Jim's hands back
oh,
and
that's
forth.
Right. Follow
and he was
my
just
hands.
Passing. So I was like, okay, if this dog's not scared of the guitar, he's a keeper because this dog's got to be involved in music.
And I was thinking about it from the dog's perspective, right? So Puppy in Love is written from the dog's perspective, is that, hey, I'm really lucky that you found me, that we found each other, you know, and I'm in as much in love with you as you are with me, you know, I'm
so
a puppy in love.
So yes, it does sound like something a dog would say
yeah.
in the whole song. So.
I really, really lick you. Oops. I mean, I like
you.
Right.
Right. It's a fun, cute song, as all your songs are.
Thank you.
Your target audience is expecting that. Yeah. 25 years, do you have parents who came to your shows as kids, bringing their kids now?
Yes, absolutely.
That's the coolest part, right?
It is. The next generation is coming, and people are always like, doesn't that make you feel old? And I'm like, no, it makes me feel great. I love it. I absolutely love it. So, yeah, we're seeing it more and more. And
but someone who liked music at 7 years old, who had fun at your concert, clearly still likes music.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so many kids have even said they went into music because of you.
Yep, I've had that. Well, and then I get an email from, we got an email recently from someone from England or something, wasn't it, that said something similar, like, hey, I listened to your stuff growing up, and it inspired me to be a musician.
Or a music therapist.
And they're probably a lot better musician than I am.
Well, they got a head start.
They got a head start, right.
They were exposed to how fun music could be.
Yes.
When you are taking up music at 8, 9, 10 years old, it can be rather tedious.
Oh, yeah.
It can be tedious because you don't have an aptitude for it, and it's just a grind.
Yeah.
Or you could be Eddie Van Halen taking piano lessons.
Yes, exactly.
Who is messing with his teacher, who realizes it's basically the scene from Rocket Man where Elton John plays the classical piece and then stops.
Uh-huh.
And then the teacher's like, go on.
And then
he wasn't reading the music. That's how much he had heard her play.
Right.
And Eddie Van Halen was the same way. Yep. He could play anything he heard.
Yeah.
And so he wasn't learning piano from the piano teacher. He was just hearing it and playing it.
And
his
it should
own way.
Be a love. You should play to love it, really.
And so hopefully you get an instructor who recognizes you don't have the aptitude, but you can still love it. You can still have fun. You can still have an understanding of here are the scales,
right?
Here are major chords, minor chords, how that works, and you don't have to become Elton John or Eddie Van Halen or Cat Stevens or even Mr. Stinky Feet.
Yes.
But also the people who, you know, or who are born with perfect pitch and can play everything by ear has a teacher who doesn't say, no, no, no. Let's go back to the boring scale. It's like, well, let's make that fun for them. Make it challenging and be like Eddie Van Halen's teacher. It's like, okay, I've got something special in front of me. I just don't want to screw this up.
Right.
I think we noticed something in both of our girls. We have one daughter who plays guitar and the other who plays drums. And when they were toddlers, I know Lida was strumming the ukulele. Oh, do you want guitar lessons? I don't need lessons. I know what I'm doing. You know, that confidence because they have a natural love for music.
I'm already playing it.
Same thing with drums.
Are you not listening?
I mean, can't you hear me? I mean, in a child's mind, when they pick up an instrument before they're ever in elementary school, they know what they're doing. They love what they're doing. And I think that's really important to nurture.
And to capture it at that point.
And there's a sweet spot, though, where once you get into lessons, or maybe you don't get the right instructor and it squashes that love and becomes a chore. And did you practice your piano today? Well, no, because I don't want to. It's not fun anymore. I think you have to keep it fun. You know, we believe that with music. We believe that with reading. Mm-hmm. I mean, if that's, we're really into literacy.
Yes,
and, you know, as long as it's fun, it's going to naturally develop into skills that will become lifelong, whether it's music or reading.
Mm-hmm. And yes, those are skills that you can do for a long time.
Yeah.
And enjoy it.
And, you know, you can always appreciate music. Even if you don't make it, you can appreciate it, you know. That's why I like working with kids, because they are all musicians. We are all musicians. As adults, we've forgotten the dancer in us, the musician in us, the singer in us, because things were squashed or squeezed out of us. But yes, kids know what to do. They know how to keep a beat. It's the most natural thing in the world, really. And
if you couldn't, you wouldn't be able to walk.
Correct.
Right.
That there are rhythmic things that the human body does that naturally connect with the rhythm of music, but then also intonation, rising pitch, falling pitch is how we interpret what someone is saying.
Right. And you know when to expect it,
and
you know when it's going to end.
And when you can play with those expectations, like where I turned a statement into a question just by my intonation, do a twist, that's all music.
Yes. And I really do love when young parents come up to me and say, oh, my daughter just loves music. And I'm like, yeah, of course. Yes. Yes, she does. It's the most natural thing in the world.
Yeah.
You did too. I mean, what I mean, you know what I mean? It's as if it's some sort of a eureka moment for them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. We all have that rhythm right here in our mm-hmm. hearts. You know, we can't get away from it.
Jenny said dogs are born to love. And then you kind of hedged a little bit because, well, there's some dogs that don't seem to get that opportunity. And it's because they were in an environment where they weren't Absolutely. Allowed yep. to love.
Yeah. The humans are the ones who messed that up.
Who screwed up. Yeah, and it's the same way with love. Kids with yes. music. Yep. They're yes, born absolutely. To love music.
Yep.
It's only when they're not allowed to explore it, listen to it, appreciate it, or access it without judgment.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. So and I think that's what Jim's concerts represent. He allows children to be children, to have fun, to express themselves. We all express ourselves differently, and that's something he talks about at his shows. And he gets the parents up there maybe reconnecting with their inner child and their love for their own child. And I think also your concerts represent not only finding, you know, your natural love of music, but that you can grow up to have fun.
Yes.
Look at you. I mean,
yes. Right. Exactly.
I mean, we get a lot of
we're
like
supposed to
you
have
do
fun.
That for a living. And yeah, absolutely. A grown man can stand up here and have fun and make a living at it. And so can you, whether you end up being a music therapist or you be a doctor or, you know, you've got that great new song on your album about when I'm 25.
Yeah. It's about, you know, kind of what kids dream about when they grow up, what, you know, where will I live? What will I be doing? What could I be a unicorn trainer? Sure. If you want to be a unicorn trainer, that'd be great. Yes. A bubblegum tester? Yes.
Yeah. So the song When I'm 25 also comes from because it's Jim's 25th year.
Mr. Stinky Feet is 25.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yes, and in many kids' eyes, they probably think you are. I know that the age is so abstract for young minds. Mm-hmm. Like, yes.
Kids think I'm 16, some think I'm 80.
Yes.
And it's titled Scoops of Love. And that's why you hear songs on there like Puppy in Love. You hear songs on there about ice cream, about chocolate, about family, about music, because those are all the things that we scoop up that we love. And I think this album really, truly embraces everything that he's fallen in love with in 25 years.
I don't want to sound too pretentious. So I'm trying
go
to think
ahead.
Of, so I'll just go with this. I think it's important to give kids and everyone permission to love things.
Yeah, yes, yes, yes.
Instead of being guided into, well, don't be too interested in that. That's never going to be a career. Right. Or where's that going to take you? Or that's
like that.
Too much of that is bad for you. Well, too much of anything is bad for you. But let a kid explore.
Yeah.
Loving chocolate, loving music, loving a dog, right. experimenting with things, taking a clock apart.
Yes. No, I'm fully with you on that. And really, and I think we've talked about over the years, Jenny and I have, about my shows giving kids permission to laugh, to sing, to dance. I remember I played a school many years ago, and we had a great school assembly, a gymnasium full of kids. Mm-hmm. And we were dancing, we were playing, and it was great. And then the principal got up afterwards, and he said, "Kids, I think you owe Mr. Stinky Feet an apology." And I was behind him and I was like, what possibly could these kids have done? And some of you were up and you were singing and you were dancing. And I'm like, yeah, that was the point.
Am I in Footloose?
Exactly. I was like, dude, I think you completely missed the point.
My first exposure to you, I do not have children.
Yeah.
So that kind of, there's not as much of a Venn diagram overlap between the music you perform and the music I listen to. But I was at Mid-Continent Library's Woodneath branch one time, which has a nice performance space. Oh, and at that time, it was before they even had the big auditorium.
Yes.
So this was just like in the kids' area.
Right.
And I was in there, and I thought John, Paul, George, and Ringo were walking through. Like, what is this happening in the library? Because it was chaos.
Yes.
Singing and screaming and jumping and dancing. Yeah. So I check with the librarian next to me what is happening.
Yeah.
Mr. Stinky Feet. And she couldn't have been more excited.
Thank God for the librarians. I love it.
And they were not trying to quash that at all.
No.
It's Mr. Stinky Feet. Let them have fun. Let them enjoy music. There will come a time when they go to the symphony, and it's not Mr. Stinky Feet, it's Mendelssohn or Bach.
Right.
And you sit and listen quietly and you process it differently because you've developed the love of music, the joy it brings you from listening to Mr. Stinky Feet.
Yeah, and I hope so. I certainly hope so, yes.
I hope they hang on to that because, you know, by when I was talking about encouraging a child's love of music, because there does come a time when maybe about 9 or 10, they become very self-conscious. They're no longer that confident kid mm-hmm. that knows how to play the drums or knows how to play the guitar. They're suddenly the kids like, everybody's watching me. I don't want them to watch me. They never don't want to be the center of attention anymore. Right. And so your concerts allow them to really embrace that time before that self-consciousness sets in. And you hope that once they break through that, you know, preteen mm-hmm. angst, that they'll blossom into these people, these grown humans who dance again and have that joy.
Yes. And you know, I have to have a confession. There are moments during my shows where I find myself trying to rein the kids in.
Yeah.
And I'd notice it. And then I did it today at a show. You know, because I invite kids to come up and play instruments and mm-hmm. we get in a line.
There's an order.
And, you know, just because I tend to move around a lot. I run around a lot. I jump. I have hit many kids in the head with my guitar. Accidentally. And so I keep them in a line. Say, hey, stay in this line. You guys say,
well, it's for your own safety.
Yeah. But then I kind of get like, no, you got to get, you gotta stay in the line. And I find myself getting a little bit strict about mm-hmm. that. And after rain, and like, hey, being kids, yeah. they're dancing.
This is what I wanted. Fun.
Yeah, this is right. So,
well, but every it's now your and job to keep them safe. You know, you well, don't want correct. Them dancing yes. into your speakers or your mm-hmm. cables. And, right. you know, mm-hmm. he's been compared to Mick Jagger when he's up there on stage and he literally moves around all over.
Yeah.
I'm a certified yoga instructor and
big fan. Saved my back.
When someone's new to yoga, it's what you described about you're self-conscious.
Yes.
About everyone is looking at me. Am I doing the pose like the person on the next mat? And really sort of the sign of an advanced practice is when you take care of yourself, when you don't try to push yourself to what's the teacher expect of me? What are others doing? And not even caring what's going on in the next mat.
Yes.
Just this is your practice. And to get there with music, I'm going to sing, I'm going to dance. And there's a point where either you consciously realize it or it just drifts away and doesn't matter anymore. No one is looking at you or listening to you because they're dancing and singing too.
Yes, right. That is a perfect place to arrive at.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, I love that. That's a great analogy.
Make a song out of that. Get to work on it. Okay. Snap, snap.
Yes.
Chip, chop, chip.
Right on it.
When you have your next album, I want you to let me know. Come back and we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Any updates on Dobby? Maybe if Dobby gets a brother or sister, I want to know about that. They just exchanged a look.
Yes, we're glad to keep you up to date on that. Yeah, you know, there's so much that goes on. And may I put a pitch out to artists out there listening to. There comes a point as an artist where you think, I don't know if I've got another one in me. And guess what? There's always seems to be something in the well to pull up, even when you think there's not. So who knows? I mean, I'm going to keep doing this as long as my fingers and my back will allow me to do it. And my voice holds out. And I hope I'm like Pete Seeger, who was in his 90s playing his banjo with his gnarled kind of arthritic fingers. Mm-hmm. But he was out there doing it, you know?
Well, and you also have books. I picture more books out there. A lot that's of his, three of his songs that he wrote for children have been turned into books. And so that's something I'm working on. Continue to do.
More, working on two more right now.
Yes. And more information on that is available on the website.
Yes.
So you can get the books there. And then also your true crime book.
Yes.
Because
a little bit different from Mr. Stinky Feet. And some people, So last year I had a true crime memoir published. And it started as my master's thesis now 27 or more years ago. And I submitted it as my master's thesis and got my degree. And then it sat for years. And I finally, during COVID, dusted off all the notes in a box in the basement and dove back into it and finished it to a point where it could be published. And it was. So
It was published in last year,
April 22. Of 22. Yes, it came out.
So check that out for a true crime memoir.
It's as much memoir as it is true crime. But yes, it's about a family from Kansas City.
Probably won't be a lot of seven-year-olds showing up to get that signed at a concert. Yeah. No, that's a different audience, but something for mom and dad. Check that out on the website. Jim and Jenny Cosgrove, thank you for fostering.
Thank you.
Thank you for doing what you're doing and getting the word out. But yes, fostering it was a great experience. And I hope we can do it again.
We did continue to foster after Dobby, but Dobby also became very adamant that he wanted to be the only dog in the house. We did foster two more dogs after we adopted, and he was not happy with that. He tried, but he is our one and only, and he's very clear about that.
Yeah, so, we tried that with Peaches. She would be nice to a dog for a couple of days until they started settling in, and she realized, this is not a guest?
Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly
that's where I draw the line. Again, it's, hit the bricks, pal.
You know what your dog wants. You know how they're communicating, and I'm not going to force them into that. But, you know, eventually, you know, we'll see. Maybe we'll foster guinea pigs. I don't know. We'll see.
No.
Pet Project's looking for fosters. Literally for anything.
It is such a reward. And if someone's on the fence about fostering because they're also afraid about getting attached and letting go, it is the most selfless gift you can give to foster and let go, because it's such a beautiful experience to know that you're providing a home for a dog and connecting a family with just the right new canine family member. So don't let that hold you back thinking, oh, I just don't want to go through that. Because, I mean, I would have missed out on so much if I would.
Well, you're sad because that dog made you so happy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But now they're making another family happy.
Yes.
They have the joy that you had. Uh-huh. So keep that in mind.
Very cool.
Well, Jim, Jenny, I can't wait to have you back again and have some updates on Dobby and music and books and everything. So thank you so much for being on Dog Words.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cheers.
I'm Phil Hatterman, and you've been listening to Dog Words, presented by Rosie Fund. Thank you to Jenny and Jim Cosgrove for joining us today. Links to jimcosgrove.com and Mr. Stinky Feet's social media are in the description. To hear more interviews about fostering, just search for Foster in the Dog Words archive at rosiefund.org/podcast. Next time on Dog Words, Craig Grossi, the author of Craig and Fred, A Marine, A Stray Dog, and How They Rescued Each Other, shares their amazing story and talks about his wonderful follow-up book, Second Chances, A Marine, His Dog, and Finding Redemption. A big thank you to alternative string duo The Wires, featuring cellist Sasha Groshong and violinist Laurel Morgan Parks, for playing the wonderful music you've heard on today's and previous episodes of Dog Words. Supporting The Wires supports our mission. Learn more about The Wires, including their concert schedule, at thewires.info, and download their music on iTunes. Check out fiddlelife.com and learn to play fiddle and cello fiddle online from Laurel and Sasha, even if you've never played before. Join Laurel and Sasha as they explore new music and delve into the inspiration behind each work as hosts of Sound Currents on 91.9 Classical KC. Click on the Sound Current links in the description for more information. Go to rosiefund.org to shop and get links to our social media. As always, please download, follow, rate, and share Dog Words. This helps us with sponsorships, then Rosie Fund can help more dogs. Send us your comments, questions, and suggestions via the contact form at rosiefund.org, and let us know if you would like to be a sponsor or a guest of the Dog Words podcast. Thank you for listening to Dog Words, and remember, we save each other.